Keith, from yesterday when we...
For some of you that were not here and those of you are, we talked about some kind of a comprehensive view concerning our ministry that would enable us to minister to as many people as we can on our campus and yet as intensely as we can with some. And so through the use of this triangle, the idea of the bunch, this is the students we have contact with, the devotional meetings, dorm Bible studies, retreat, trying to get them in church, Sunday school, everything we can do. And I know in our student center we felt too that to make good books available, we were about 25 miles from the nearest Christian bookstore. We have a bookstore available and just such that we can suggest reading and things for them. And so we try to do any and everything we can to help people as much as we can. Through retreats, we have groups this spring in which we'd send students, divide them in teams, and we contacted churches, all the churches in our association all over that area, saying if we could come for 4 Sunday nights and help with their young people in their devotional life and this type of thing. So here we're thinking about the big mass ministry, everything we can do to have contact with people. And then out of this, it's our objective, through the personal development of that person, to help him become a disciple of Jesus Christ. And we passed out the little sheet called A Profile of a Disciple. I'd say this to you that were not here yesterday. I would not encourage you at all to go back, mimeograph that, pass it around to your students. It's not a mold you pour a student in, but when the word disciple is mentioned, something comes to your mind. It may be very foggy, very hazy, so we've tried to go through the scriptures, find out some basic things that we think are important in what a disciple is. And therefore, when I'm working with a student, I don't pour him in a mold saying, now here's all these things you have to measure up to. But I can look at things. I can say, now what about his prayer life? What about his devotional life? What about his realization of Christ's presence in his life? What about his love for all men? And see, as I see these areas and I'm working with a student, then I can notice needs and try to deal with him and help him in that area. So that's the value, the profile.
Do you personally use the little sheet, the check sheet, individually with a student or?
Yes, you can do it that way. Now, we have another one. I'm not sure that I brought them, but we tried to think through what are we doing with students, and it seemed to us that we are basically working with them in 3 areas. One is character building. We want to see honest men and women come through the BSU. We want to help them. We want to build their character. We want to see them loving people, concerned for others, anything. We want to see them be men and women of prayer, of the Bible. And so we're trying to build their character. That's one thing that we're trying to do. Another thing we're trying to do is to develop ministry skills. We want people to know how to witness, how to lead a dorm Bible study, how to follow up on a young Christian, how to help a person in getting prepared for marriage, how to handle his finances, and many things like this. So we're trying to develop ministry skills so we can go out in the world and be effective. And then the third thing is we want to impart vision, and we feel like that's more caught than it is taught. But as a result of what we're doing, we want this fellow to begin to get some vision, because there are people that have a great deal of knowledge and they're fine, upstanding people, and they don't do a whole lot. And unless he comes to the point where he really has some vision as to what God's will for his life is, and in the area of this vision is trying to expose him to many things and help him discern what he does best and where his gifts lie and where he can best serve the Lord. So that's something of our approach. Now, when I'm meeting with a student, and we've just worked this out this summer, a group of us on the staff spent time working this out, and not only on the BSU there, but from Nebraska and Kansas State and Iowa State, some of these places, working on this. But always before, and when I mentioned those 3 areas, we tried to think of many character traits under a person's character, like, is this person honest? And many things like this. And then sometimes we give this sheet to a student, and there may be 30 things under each one of these areas, and there's a scale you can evaluate yourself from 1 to 10. And many times they will evaluate that. And I've done this with our staff and some of our students. I will work out a sheet like this on them also. They don't even know I do this. But I have done this, and then I've given them a sheet and said, why don't you try to honestly evaluate these areas of your life, and then let's get together and talk about it. Well, see, if here's a person, and on the scale, he evaluated himself from 1 to 10 in a certain area, say 3, and I also felt like he was really weak in that area, then he's open to help. Because if here's a person that has a problem in their life, and you just run in here going to help them, maybe they don't want help. But if he senses that need, he's much more open to help. Now, maybe if in an area he scored himself very low and I scored him very high, that may not mean that he's low in that area. It may mean he has a very bad self-image. And that may be an area in which he needs help. So I think I brought one of those with me, and I'd be delighted to see that you get them, and maybe I could even get them mimeographed or duplicated or something tomorrow. But it's just an area. You could do it yourself. Think about character. What about honesty? And things like this. And then to try to evaluate them. And see, this is why I think many times with students, if a student comes in and he has a need, we try to help him. But what about if it's my time to get with a student and he doesn't have any particular problem? And yet I know that there are many of these areas that I want to cover with him. And so this way, when he doesn't particularly have a problem, I can try to cover some of these areas with him that I want to be able to cover. We made a list one time, summer before last. We asked our staff, said, I want you to list, let's suppose we had a student for 4 years. And let's suppose during that time, what would we cover? If a student just walked over to DSU the first day of school and said, okay, here I am, I want to be involved in your program. As far as I know, I'll be here for 4 years. And I got to thinking, well, boy, that's a tremendous trust. What would we do with him? And so we asked each one of the staff members to take some time and sit down and write every single thing that you would hope in 4 years to cover with that student. In the area of ministry skills, character, vision, areas like this. Things that you not only want him to learn, I mean facts, but also things you want him to become. And therefore, we try to do that. And every one of us made a list separately. And then when we came back, we Xeroxed those lists, and each one of them had a list. And then I asked him to take 4 sheets of paper and just go aside and think, okay, what do we most need to cover with a freshman? And so I said, you take these sheets of paper and you look over this list. Maybe one thing I've listed here you don't think we even need to cover. So you don't, but you look on it and you say, all right, now when do we need to cover this with a student? And you say, someone like, for example, a devotional life. Everyone on our staff felt like we ought to do this when he's a freshman. Now I know that we may intend to cover when he's a junior, the husband-wife relationships and things like this, dating, a number of things. You might say, well, he needs that the first week. Yeah, he does. And if the student has a problem in that area, he can come for us to talk with him anytime he has a problem. But one thing we've tried to do is get balanced so that in a 4-year period, the things that we feel like are really basic, he would be exposed to. Now, if he doesn't come in with a problem, we're going to cover that his junior year. And once we did that, we went back and listed these separately. And then we got together and we saw everyone felt like with a freshman student, we ought to deal with friendship. Because we felt like he's going to be making friends, and what are some of the things we can do to help him in his relationships in the dorm? What about his self-image? What about his assurance of salvation? What about evangelism? And so then we listed those and tried to get a sequence. And then it was then that we designed our Vespers built around that. We gave him a handout. We had a Sunday school lesson written on it, a Bible study, verses to memorize, everything so that this way, when a student came week by week, they knew exactly what we were going to be dealt with. Now, many times our students go to Sunday school, he'll hear one thing, go to training, hear something else. He'll go to church and, you know, hear something else. He'll come to Vespers, it's about one thing. The noonday program, it's about another thing. And a lot of times it's kind of a hodgepodge. And I'm not saying it's altogether bad, but we felt like, why don't we get some line of direction so we know where we're going and actually work out a 4-year curriculum. Now, there's some problems with it. What about the people that come in now this year? They're sophomores. But at least we started last year, and the students, it increased our Vesper attendance by average attendance by over 100. And they said it's by far, they felt like the best thing that we've ever done as far as our BSU is concerned, because there was some continuity and content. And we really tried to major on that, because many times the people would have their assignment as much as 6 months ahead of time, or at least 2 or 3 months ahead of time as to what they'd be dealing with. Now, this is what I'm talking about. We try to think, what does a disciple need to be exposed to? What does he need to know, and what does he need to be? And so this is what we're working on. In the area of personal development, we said in here, we're working with him on his individual personal growth. We're helping him. We fit into his schedule as much as possible. We try to do everything we can to help him. It's the with them idea. We go out with them. You know, I mentioned something about the athletic ministry. 4 years ago, we looked over our campus, and there was nothing that we had in the BSU that a football player at Oklahoma University in season could ever attend. Vespers at 6:30, they're still on the football field or just getting off. And they could not
take a shower, go eat, and get to our meeting in time. Noonday, we had noonday 5 days a week. Every day at noon, they meet with the coaches. We'd have sometimes things, instead of going out for a retreat, quite often during the year, we'll have Friday night session at the Baptist Student Center. Friday night, where they have a home game or away game, they take them out of town. If it's a away game, they'll go wherever they're playing. If not, they take them to Oklahoma City so nobody will bother them. They cannot come to anything we have along that line. Sunday school, the coach has them running on Sunday morning. The only thing possible they could possibly attend would be Sunday, would be church on Sunday morning. They even had a meeting on Sunday afternoon, which may last through training union time, and many times they wouldn't get to go to church. And if the boy was injured, he had to go to training room. Many times he couldn't go to Sunday morning church. And we looked over our program, and there was absolutely nothing that we had we could minister to them. Glorietta, the day we had to be here, they had to be back at OU working out. Now, it's not that they're a special group, like some people, oh, the big ball. No, it's not that. It's just that we're going to have an entirely different program for them, or we're not going to reach them. How many varsity football players are here this week? Absolutely zero, and that's how many will be here next year. Our program isn't designed for them. All right? The thing we had to see is we have to go over there with them. And so we got in contact with one boy. We worked with him. That year we witnessed almost every boy on the team. As I mentioned, last year out of 45 new freshmen, we had 33 of them to come in June for our retreat. And out of 45 freshmen last year, we were having 30 in Bible study every week. 7 Bible studies going on in the football dorm. And when I was sitting in church not long ago, I could count 17 varsity football players in our church on Sunday morning. Now, but first, we had to go where they were, and for 2 years, spend much, much time there. Now, once we've done that, now in off-season, or any time they get out of practice, we're having many of them come to Vespers. We had 8 black freshmen this past year. We were not reaching blacks. We had tried for 3 years to get them in our Bible study. We had Greg Pruitt and some of them. They've gone to Colorado with us on our retreats. We had a special retreat. We had 18 of them go. But we couldn't reach them consistently. So we decided this year, we're going to have to make a special group out of them or we'll never reach them. So this year, out of 8 freshmen, black freshmen on the team, not one time the entire first semester, ever, not one single time did we ever have under 5. The night before finals, we had 5 in Bible study. Now, we still have a long way to go with those guys. And I'm not sure some of them we've helped a whole lot. But I'm saying that you have to go after some people. And I believe you can go in any fraternity or any sorority or any group. So we divided our campus among staff such that we'd go to certain dorms. And so when I go over that dorm, I know every boy in that dorm. And when I go over there, I can go over to visit. I know this one. I know this one. No, I say every boy. There may be 3 or 4 that I don't. But we know where they are. The guys have witnessed to them. And last year, to our knowledge, there's not a single player in that dorm that did not, at one time, or usually several times, and in attractive ways, hear the gospel. Because 33 of them heard it in one weekend, and 6 of them accepted the Lord before school ever started. And we'd visited 26 of them in their homes in Oklahoma, New Mexico, and Texas before they ever got there. And these fellows did it themselves. They just take a weekend, fellows work with them, and so we just scattered across these 3 states and visited in their homes with them. Well, so it's the idea of going after the bunch, and you've got to go after them. Because basically, many of them will not come into your student center. So try to have Bible studies and things going, everything you can to reach them. Now, some of what we're going to talk about today, people can misunderstand easily. Because they think, we talked yesterday about selectivity. Selecting a few that you literally give your life to. And you might say, well, what about the others? Well, as I mentioned, this last fall we had almost 800 a week in Bible studies and we're having 400 investors. Well, and it's growing because out in here they're in contact with many people and then all the way along the line people are getting help. So that of these people, we have literally, there are literally hundreds of people that are getting help. And some of them, most of them, many of them, individual personal attention. So this way, I feel that I should give my time with these students at more advanced, still being willing to talk to a freshman. But if every year, as I mentioned, if I go back and start with a freshman, and that's basically what we have in many situations, we'll have the director and the bunch, and we just keep adding them to the bunch. And there's not the development of these people along the line such that we want to help all of them. And many of the people, most of the people coming to know Christ on our campus, are people that I've never seen before. They've not been in the meetings necessarily. They're in the Bible study groups, and they're brought by the Bible study leaders, and many times won to the Lord through their Bible study leaders. So I wanted to more or less review that. Now, if you will, look on the second page. I mentioned this book, Master Plan of Evangelism. Down at the bottom, here's some great principles. And the whole book, he has a chapter on each one of these words. You'll notice at the bottom, the area of selection. After praying all night, Jesus chose 12. He was even selective in prayer. I mentioned that yesterday, where he said, Simon, Simon, Satan's desire to have all of you. It's plural. But he said, I've prayed especially for you. It's singular. When you get straightened out, you strengthen the brethren. Well, what happened? Peter got strengthened, got straightened out, and he strengthened the brethren. So it wasn't that Jesus was trying to be choosy, but he had an objective. Now, every director I've ever known is closer to some students than he is his others. Normally, it's on the basis of the council or some way. I mentioned yesterday, I like to choose them on the basis, number one, first of all, their heart for God and their availability, their teachability. And then one thing I did not mention yesterday was their willingness to pay a price. Because I think once you really get them in training, there is a price to pay as far as time. Time and time with them. As I mentioned, these fellows, the five guys that I first started with, and four of them are BSU directors, and the other one is planning to be, and we spent 10.5 hours a week together, not including the personal time that I'd meet with them individually. Well, as a result of it, and see, this whole area of commitment, I think, is involved. Like, remember when we first came, people, we wanted to go to Colorado one year, and it was going to cost $35. Well, it's going to cost $70 to go. And people said, students here just don't have that kind of money. And so I get aside, and, you know, I visit some of the students. Have you ever spent $10 on a weekend on a date? Sure. $5? Yeah. They take a girl out to eat to a movie, and it's $5, $6, $7, maybe more. I thought, isn't that amazing? We got a spring break, have an opportunity to go to a beautiful place and get a week's help in the Christian life, and they won't do it. But they'll have a day and spend $7 on a weekend. And you tell me they don't have the money? It's not they don't have money. They either don't have the commitment or they don't have the vision, one of the two. And so I said, all right, it costs $70. I will personally be responsible, and the fellows, those five fellows, and we'll meet, and we'll try to get $35 for every student that'll go if he needs it. And we had a personal conference with everyone. Do you need this help? And they said, yes. Well, that year, it cost them $35 to go to Colorado, and we had 66 to go. We raised 35, they paid 35. Next year, it cost them $68. We didn't raise any of it. And I've forgotten we had 118 or so. The other day, we took them, and it was $90. We had 150. And it's the same as I mentioned about a mission offer. This year, $9,200. It's not a matter of the students not knowing. And last year, as I said, they pledged $6,000 and gave almost 10 to help with mission projects. There are summer missions and helping directors on other campuses. So it's the idea of working with people intensely so they in turn can work with others, so they in turn can work with others. And this is a way, I think, we can develop people. And we still try to have programs, speakers, retreats, everything that any BSU would do, but try to see that people get individual, personal help because they have individual, personal problems. Now, he mentions here selection. See, some people would have a problem with this, and yet I've never read in the New Testament Jesus was ever criticized for just selecting 12. But if you read that carefully, spent all night in prayer and called them all together, and out of these he chose 12. Well, why 12? Why be choosy? Well, it was not just because of a place of privilege. It was a place of responsibility. Because he ordained 12 that they'd be with him, and then he would send them forth to preach. And so these people that you work more closely with, if they carry a large part of the responsibility. It's not just privilege of your getting time with them. So one thing here is selection, and he has a whole chapter on that in the book. And another one is association. He lived with them for 3 years. Now, one of the things that we have a problem of here with students, and I was talking to a man not long ago, and he said, you know, I'm convinced that there's even far more in the New Testament about the time Jesus and Paul spent with men than even is actually on the surface. Because he said, for example, you'll be meeting with a student and you'll have an hour conference and he's gone, or the phone will ring, or you'll get an interruption, or something like this. Whereas Paul, here he is, and he's going someplace to preach, and he walked. And I've forgotten now exactly what I read somewhere how many miles it was estimated Paul probably walked in his lifetime. And sometimes he would walk or he'd go on a boat. And it was very slow. And a lot of this time he'd have Luke with him and Titus and these men. And sometimes here they walk along all day. They had all kinds of time with these people. And that's one of the reasons. Paul would write back in First Thessalonians. After having been there, most commentators say not over 6 months at the most, possibly as little as 6 weeks, but somewhere during that time. But not over 6 months. And he could write back and say, "For from you sounded out the word of the Lord, not only in Macedonia, but in every place your faith to God was spread abroad. And I don't need to speak anything." Well, why? 6 months with them, and he had that kind of impact on their life. And I think it's because of association. And that's the way people are changed. You've got to spend time with them. And sometimes we try to do it we sometimes assign to the program that which the program cannot possibly do. The program can give them some instructions, help, encouragement, but it cannot build as deeply into the life as an individual can. And so we can combine the two. Third thing is consecration. Jesus did deal with this. Importation, he imparted things to them. Demonstration, delegation, supervision, reproduction. The whole book is built around these eight chapters, and I would highly recommend it. Now, this other little book I mentioned, this Southern Baptist missionary, lists these four things. He said the first one is the principle of concentration. A few workers thoroughly trained are more effective than many superficially trained. Now, it's not that we're not interested in numbers. We want everyone we can to be investors. I don't care what his background is or anything. We want him there if we can possibly get him. But when it comes to the area of training, we know this, when you're trying to get a job done, a few people well-trained. I'd rather have three good trained men in the demolition crew to turn loose on some darn than 10,000 college students with firecrackers. And this is the thing. They can be trained and intensively trained, and I think they should be. And then the principle of personality. He talks here, the essential training for Christian leadership is character training. And I believe that's true. Jesus dealt with their faith. He dealt with the quality of their lives. And then the third thing was principle of contact. The most potent instrument of character training is personal association. And then the principle of reality. Character training is most thoroughly and effective when it is carried out under life conditions. So, just a statement here. Don't lose your perspective. In order to reach many, we must deeply affect the lives of a few. We operate on these principles in order to produce men and women who walk with God and are equipped to win and train others. This is the way Jesus and Paul operate, and we can too. Our job is that of an equipping ministry, that of a player coach. This is the way to ultimately reach, I think, the most people. This is not theory. I think it does work. Now, this is not to belittle different approaches that different people use, but I think this is healthy in the context of a BSU program, of trying to see. Many times we gear our program towards this. We may have a director and a council in between, but I think people need different types of training. Like I said from here, when he's coming into the area of trying to get him to grow and mature, we're dealing in the area of his personal development, his growth, and second, his production. We're trying to teach him how to get his, you know, to give his testimony. But once he becomes what we feel like, he's really underway, he's committed, he's growing, he more or less meets the profile of a disciple, then we try to band him into a team, and the emphasis of that team is production. Where we try to have a leader and someone working with him. Now, we've not always done this. Like last year, we functioned primarily through the groups. But up here in these Bible study groups, we have all kinds of people. Christians sometimes, non-Christians. Because the students themselves, we don't supply contacts. We just try to have them. We say, wherever you live, if there's someone from your hometown you think would be in it, or the floor where you live. And see, this is helpful to me, and I don't know, many of you directors get letters, like here's a mother that writes and says, "Would you go see my son, and don't let him know I sent you." And this type of thing. And you've had this happen. Or go see my daughter, she's dating this fellow, and I'm not really that happy, but be careful now, don't let her know that I sent you. Well, that used to bug me, because I don't like to lie to a student, and if I just suddenly, I've never seen him, I just plop into his room, and I've done that. But I never did feel real comfortable about it. And so one of the things we have now, we had a list of every student that we had leading Bible studies and where they live, where the Bible study was held, and what time. So one day this mother called and said, "My daughter's, she's a Christian, but she's not involved in the BSU. would you go see her? And I said, I will see that she's contacted. So then I go to Carolyn and say, Carolyn, this, and I ask her, I said, where does she live? Well, she lives on the fourth floor of a certain dorm. So then I said, Carolyn, who leads a Bible study? She said, well, on that floor, a certain girl, she named her, leads that Bible study. Karen Kennedy. So we got in contact with Karen and said, Karen, a mother's called. She's concerned about her daughter. Why don't you invite her to Bible study? She says, I've already invited her. I'm already in contact with her, but I'll keep working on it. Well, I look up Thursday night, and Karen comes in and said, meet this girl. Well, it was a girl her mother had called me about. And so many times, with a network like this over the campus, it's so much easier to have a student to do it. And see, we're trying to train them so basically they could do what I would do with them anyway, if I were to visit them. Well, it sure takes, it helps a great deal. Now, do you have any question about this?
You said your counsel is sometimes in between your stock market, or is that...
Well, not necessarily. I'm saying, I think traditionally in BSU, and the way it was, I know the way I operated, is I was a director and I had a counsel, and then apart from that, the counsel primarily programmed for to reach the other people. But now, our counsel functions primarily through Bible study groups. And we like it much better. Because I did mention the other day, now, I don't want you to misunderstand this. You function however you need to. What we've done, someone said, what did you do in Bible, what are you doing in Bible study? Well, it depends on when you're talking about. Because year before last we did this, last year we did this, this year we're doing something else. But the point I said, you have a person on the council. You spend a council meetings an hour a week, a personal conference with him an hour a week. He needs to meet with his committee an hour a week. He needs to get some personal time with the people on his committee, and even if he divides that up, and that week only spend 1 hour, you've taken 4 hours of his time, and you have basically what you've done up to this time is talk. Now, that committee has to go out and do whatever work there is, and the first thing you know, then when I go to fellows and I say, I want you to be in a Bible study. And in order to be in it, I want you to spend 3 hours a week studying before you ever come to the Bible study. And then, I want you to be in this Bible study where it'll take an hour and a half, and I want you in turn to lead a Bible study. And then I want you to get personal time with people, and the first thing you know, then you got all kinds of hours. And so what we found over a period of time, this bothered me deeply for years. I never felt comfortable. And I know in this council with your council members, you're supposed to turn it and help him also in his spiritual life and things like this. But I also know that sometimes that's rather difficult to do. And so what we found over a period of time, we work primarily, we still have more student participation than we've ever had, but we do not place, but basically in the hand of a sophomore, the direction we're going in campus evangelism. And see, that's the danger many times, is this person, and I know when I first came, we had a person in campus evangelism, when we got to talking about what we were going to do, his question was, if we should. I thought, boy, well, now see, we're supposed to relate to him, but I also realized that I had to have 14 personal conferences a week to keep the organization afloat. I also was married and had children. And so I found for me that was not the best way. And some of you are in situations where you can get more trouble than with the counseling. You keep questioning the virgin birth, and I wouldn't have to. And you need student participation. But we have it. But when our students go into finals, the week before finals, we go into staff meeting. And this summer, I would say that our staff has probably spent upwards to 100 hours talking about what we're going to do next year. And I had a man to come to me one time who was had a son on a freshman council. And he was rather bugged because of the time the BSU was taking while he was on a freshman council. And he said to me one time, he said, Max, why don't you decide the direction of that program and y'all plan, and then you give your time to helping the students and not take all my son's time over there trying to figure out the backdrop for freshman week. And so that made sense, and I gave him the old story, we're trying to get him involved, but now, see, I like it so much better. We do meet with students, we do have people in charge areas, but we meet with them, they're in a team. If a guy doesn't set the noonday chairs up right, and he's on Wayne Wright's team. Wayne's the one to deal with him because Wayne's the one who has his heart. He's investing his time with him. And then if we need somebody to set it up, we have it set up through Bible study groups, where if we need someone to get ready for the alumni luncheon, three of the Bible study leaders come over, bring their Bible study. Therefore, they do something besides study the Bible. we get far more work done. I don't have to have anything like the conferences I once had to keep the organization afloat. Now, some people say, well, does that mean you direct it? Well, what is my title? Director. And I think before God, we have a responsibility to direct. And I don't mean by this that it's a dictatorship. And it was the students themselves who came and said, Max, we were getting ready for a nominating committee to meet. And we used to meet at 6:30 in the morning because, you know, it's class schedule. And we met for weeks nominating those officers. And they said, we don't think any longer with the direction we're going to the program, that is best at all. Why don't we do it differently? And so we do, and we work primarily through the Bible study leaders, and they have additional responsibilities other than leading the Bible study, and we get the organization done to the fact that we're having far more people than we've ever had, but we're not taking much of their time. Most of these students, their time is primarily given to their ministry. We help them, and we try to encourage them. That's your ministry out in the dorm. And so as a result of it, they have time to minister, and they have time to get personal help in their ministry. Because it seems to me that our job is equipping them to have the ministry. So I don't know. You've got to have organization. I don't want you to misunderstand that. But I'm just saying, for me, I don't find that. Paul didn't go to Ephesus and elect the president, vice president, secretary. Now, for you, for our situation, but I really don't believe that that's the heart of the gospel content. But the thing you do see is equipping these people to ministry. And so that's neither here nor there. Have organization. So have whatever is you can do to give your time. And when you have to have 14 personal conferences a week like I did, that drove me up a wall. I didn't have time, that much time, to get over on the campus. And therefore, as a result of it, I didn't know what they were facing. And I didn't know what was going on. But now I know how every fellow on the football team that we have any contact with, I know how he keeps his room. And I know directors that don't even know that about their BSU president. And you're not going to help him in those areas unless you get out where he is. And you're not going to get out where he is if you're sitting in your office all day having conferences. I don't think. Now, let's go on. Maybe look at your second sheet here on Follow Me. The Follow Me principle. I wanted to spend some time with this because I think here's a principle that many times we more or less ignore. Perhaps the greatest single principle in making disciples is a follow me principle. This is a principle of setting the example, embodying what you desire to teach. As someone said, if you want to send an idea around the world, just wrap it up in the life of a man. And I believe there's some truth to this. Setting the pace, leading out in what you want to do. You do this, and you ask him to follow you. Now notice, this is what Paul did. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, if you have your Bible, you might want to turn to that. I want us to deal with just two or three verses here. And this is the idea of being an example as much as is possible and also setting the pace. If you want them to witness, they're probably, as we said, vision is more caught than taught. And they more or less pick that up from you. And so in order for them to do it, you need to be doing it. And 1 Thessalonians 1:5, notice how Paul in the latter part of this verse. Well, in the first part, he said, our gospel came to you not only in word, but also in power and the Holy Spirit and much assurance. And he says, you know what kind of men we proved to be among you for your sake, or what manner of men. Now here, Paul, he calls attention to the quality of his own life. He said, you people remember how I lived when I was among you. You remember what kind of men we were? Now, I want us to look at this idea. 1 Timothy 4:12, Paul writing to the young man Timothy, and he says, be thou an example of the believers in word, conversation, spirit, faith, purity, all these things. He said, Timothy, you be the example. You set the pace in this area. Titus 2:7 and 8, in all things show yourself a pattern of good works in doctrine, showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, so that no one will have any evil thing to say about you. Now, there's a strong emphasis in the area of setting the example. And he also, in Titus 1:5, 1 Timothy 3:1 through 7, as he says here, 1 Timothy 3, you know, he talks about if any man desires the office of a bishop, he desires a noble task. If any man is, in the first word there, if any man is blameless. And he goes on to talk about the quality of the life of a man who's in spiritual leadership. And so here's just an emphasis. In 1 Thessalonians 2, 10 through 12, he said, you know how we exhorted and comforted. He said, you know how holily and justly and unblameably we behaved ourselves among you that believe. And so he lists these things, how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you. And he goes on down to verse 12, that you would walk worthy of God. And so there's a strong emphasis in, first of all, our setting the example and trying to embody what we want our students to do. And I think of this in terms of, what about your devotional life? Are the students on your campus, how about those that are really close, what about their devotional life? Are they really having a solid devotional life? Well, what about you, see? And it comes down with more of the idea of you sharing what's been meaningful to you. Now, I know at different times, different things are meaningful, but I have a sneaking suspicion that if you read your Bible, it's helped you. If you'll get him to read his Bible, it'll help him. Now, I think there's a danger here in our background of all of the differences and things that we miss underlying basic principles. Now, Jesus dealt with Peter different than Matthew. They were different men. But there were some basic overall principles that he used. He's getting time with them. He selected them and all these things, see. And so, I think here, what we should try to do, and I think sometimes this is an area in our own life that we really have to be careful about. You know, I can go to certain BSUs and I find people. I was talking to a man not long ago, and I don't say this as, but I'm trying to illustrate a point. And he said, Max, I can go to a state and see if you've been there. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, and he said, I was in three state conventions this fall. Two of them were directors of God from OU. And he said, when I came in to teach a Bible study, he said they had notes and pencils and they all had a Bible. And he said they were eager. And Charles Rosell said, I went to the other state to lead four Bible studies in their state convention. And he said, half of the students didn't even have a Bible. Now, let me tell you, the attitude you have towards the Bible and using it with your students, they are going to pick up. And so I think here, if your own devotional life, I just suggest where I am, the pastor for many, many years, Preacher Highland, he used to speak out here. The one thing, if you've ever heard, he's talked about what? Reading the Bible. And now he's retired, he just reads it 5 to 6 times a year. He's increased his pace some. But he's just stressed that through the years. Read the Bible, read the Bible. He said, I go to these preachers coming, I see the preachers so discouraged and all that. And he's strong on reading the Bible. You ought to get through the Bible. You know, read it. And I try it myself. And with our students, we have a Bible reading calendar. I try to read it through every year at least once. Try to get them to do it. When I get with students, we have something to talk about. Last night, a group of us were meeting. And somebody said, oh, yeah, I just read about something was brought. And he said, oh, yeah, I just read that in my quiet time this morning. And see, when we get together, we've immediately got something around the Word of God we can fellowship about because we're reading the same passage. Now, it's not that everyone does this, but I found this helpful for my wife and I in having our own individual quiet time to be reading in the same passage. We don't talk about it every day, but then sometime when we get with... I have a layman I like to meet with on occasion. He said, hey, the other day, you know, when we were over in Nehemiah, did you notice so-and-so in a certain chapter? And I hadn't, perhaps. But there's something really to fellowship about immediately. And I think many times there's not enough fellowship around the Bible such that students need to see where we begin to get some of our answers. And so I try to be an example in those areas. Just as far as your prayer life things. Getting the time with. Now let's move to the second principle. Go teach them or get them to follow you. 1 Thessalonians 1:6. The next verse. Paul says, you became followers of us and of the Lord. Now, most people would have a real problem with this idea unless that and of the Lord is there. Because it says, here Paul says, you became followers of us and of the Lord. Now in 1 Corinthians 11:1, Paul says, you follow me like I follow Christ. And someone said, Jesus said basically, you follow me, or Paul said this, you follow me like I follow Christ. Now, don't be making any new tracks. And the idea is, if here's a man and he's following Christ, and here's somebody else and he begins to follow you, just like Paul said here, you became followers of us and of the Lord. And the day will come. It's not a matter of trying to make them dependent upon you. But one of the things you're constantly relating to these people is teaching them to depend upon the Lord, and they'll come in which you can leave out of their lives and they can go on following the Lord. But remember, we're starting with students who don't have the maturity of having had seminary and many years to think these things through. And they're basically, first of all, before they're ever attracted to Jesus, they're probably attracted to the life of someone who walks with Jesus. And I think that's true in the world everywhere. So I can honestly turn to a person and say, you know, I think if you begin a program of scripture memory, it would really help you. And I can go to some BSUs and I find students memorizing verses. And you know why? Because the director does. And so if you'll do this, and it's helped me, and so you can share it with them and begin to help them. And I am well aware of the fact that the most obnoxious guy on the earth is a guy who knows 20 verses. And that's true, because he wants to go back and, you know, clobber everybody with them and this type of thing. But that's a stage that he often goes through, and I'd rather see a student pass through that stage and get some help and go on to make this a vital part of his life than if we go around today and I said, all right, let's list the verses that have been most meaningful to you. And before we got through this group, somebody would list John 3:16 and somebody would say, oop, there went my verse. And we are people of the book, and it'll take more than voting on it in the convention to make us men and women of God and of the Bible. And so I think at this point, we should try to do things and do things that are pass-onable. I remember being in a session not long ago with a man, a doctor's degree, and he's in this church really trying to help people. And he was talking to college students about Bible study. And I'm telling you, I thought when he got through, if there's anybody here that ever learned to study the Bible, now, it is going to be one of the most fantastic works of God that I've seen in a long time. And then when he got before the church and he said, I think you ought to have a good Bible dictionary and a good commentary. So when he went over, I went up to him and I said, sir, what commentary would you recommend? Well, not any particular. What about a Bible dictionary? He said, well, there are a number. And I thought, now how many of the laymen of that church? I would bet the last dollar I have that not a single layman in that church that went out that week and bought a Bible dictionary or a commentary. Because there's not enough specific direction and help in that type of ministry. So I think what you want people to do, if you'll do yourself and share with them, you'll be amazed at what they'll do. All right, do not try to hide behind this humility of the idea, I don't feel good enough to be followed. I don't know anybody that does, but that is unscriptural. And here are some verses that you can take time to look up. Jesus did it, Mark 1, 17 and 20, and Mark 3, 14. And he would go along and he'd say, follow me, follow me, follow me. And he said, but I'm not Jesus. And that's right. You're not. But look at the point. The next one. And Paul did exactly this. He said, be followers of me, even as also in the Christ, 1 Corinthians 11:1. When we follow Christ, we need not fear to tell others to follow us. They don't become like us in personality. They'll be as unique in their personality as the day they first met you. But they will get some biblical principles and things built into their life. In 1 Corinthians 4:16, he says, wherefore I beseech you, be followers of me. Philippians 3:17, he says, wherefore I want you to follow me. Philippians 4:9, and listen to this. Paul says, those things which you both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do. And the God of peace shall be with you. Boy, that's a fantastic statement. Timothy, what you heard me do, what you saw me do, you do, and God will be with you.